All right, welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. This is John St. Augustine. Be glad that you're not. I'll do all the heavy lifting. All we're going to do, though, is go up the down staircase in the outdoor. We're going to make sense out of the senseless and do whatever we can to find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. So this is one of those times I would usually be doing the Wednesday rant, which is when I basically get to back up the dump load and just throw shit everywhere, because that's kind of how life is too. You know, people think I'm this Zen master. That's crap. I mean, sometimes I'm a Zen master, but sometimes I like just to drag my knuckles to make sure that they're scraped a little bit and I stay real with things. And one of the great things about having friends and people in the business of the media for a very long time is we're able to help and work off each other in a very difficult platform. And what always boggles my mind, it shouldn't anymore, but it does, is, you know, there's the old saying, people who know everything about everything but have never done that thing, they act like they do. And unless you've been in the media, print, television, certainly radio, and all these other platforms we have now, it's easy to sit on the sidelines and go, woulda, coulda, shoulda, this person should be this way or this person should be that way. And yet I don't see anybody that makes those comments, those critics, as they were, ever stepping up to the frickin' microphone. And that really chokes my chicken sometimes. However, I still try to maintain some decorum in all this and realizing that everybody has their opinion, but most people are just entitled to mine. And with that being said, instead of ranting, I mean, that was a little mini rant, but now we're going to slide hopefully into some Wednesday wisdom with my great gal pal, Jen Weigel. Welcome to Wednesday Wisdom with Weigel. How's that fit for you?
That sounds great. I'm happy to apply some wisdom, but I kind of want to throw some shit, too.
And sometimes, obviously, they are the same thing my dad used to say. And, of course, if you're here in Chicago, we use shit like we use mayonnaise, right? You got any shit for this? Yeah, where's that shit at? You know?
Thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here and to talk with you Wednesday or any day.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I go back and forth. Some of these are running gags between you and I, and I kind of remember, but then I forget, like, the place we met. I always think it's sacred grounds. You call it blind faith. Aren't they the same frickin' thing?
Yes, it was the Blind Faith Cafe, introduced by mutual friends. At the time, you were doing radio in, where were you? You were in Michigan, and yeah. I was at WGN, and we were meeting and like-minded individuals kind of going, holy cow, how have we not met before?
So yeah, but throwing the shit around, you know, people put it, I put it this way. When I was a kid, I used to read these books about all these great people that did great things. And I thought, man, wisdom has got to be the ultimate, you know, gift in life. If you have wisdom, that's really the pinnacle of the life experience. But I didn't know is how much you have to pay to get wise. You know, how many times you got your ass kicked, or your nuts ground down, or your whatever. And in, you know, someone like you and me, to a greater or lesser degree, we put ourselves out there in the public a lot for a very long time. And so the lessons I've learned being in the media are many and varied. But I figured, since we're kind of have this common ground today and we're working on these things, I've kind of thought that perspective really is everything when it comes to just about everything in life. And so while I am heartened to be able to do shows where I can bring some sense of wisdom to people, not just me, but in the conversations we have. It's like Jim Carrey said, I don't think you could become wise till you had your ass kicked at least a half a dozen times. That holds true, does it not?
Yeah. I mean, everybody gets their ass kicked in some regard, right? Whether it's in relationships or with family or with jobs. And sometimes it's all of it, all at once. And what's happening right now is a lot of people are, and even myself included, sometimes you go into this woe is me, like, what the heck is going on here? Especially when, I don't know, I feel like you and I were both very aware of how we try to put good stuff out there, right? You know, our books, our broadcasts, it's all, yeah, sure, you talk about being a knuckle dragger, but at the core of who you are, the core of who I am, is to help people through the tough times. But then, the messenger has tough times too.
Sure.
You know, and the reality is that my tough time looks different than your tough time, looks different than the neighbor's tough time. But we're all allowed to be human. You know, I was just walking the dog, having a very human moment, you know, and the neighbor walks by and wants to chit chat. And I'm like, not having it.
But you're Jennifer Weigel. You're supposed to talk all the time.
And I remember, you know, growing up, there was a time when we were walking somewhere. I was with my dad, the late Tim Weigel. And at the time, he was kind of like Ron Burgundy from Anchorman, where anybody would stop him and just want to shoot the shit about the Bears or the Cubs or whatever. And there were moments where he was trying to be a dad and didn't want to be Sportscaster Tim. And these people would get so furious if he didn't stop everything and talk to them about the Bears season and what he thought about it. And so I remember one very human moment where a guy was like, Tim, you got to come over sometime. I'll grill us some soft shell crab or something. And my dad just looks at me and goes, I'm never coming over for soft shell crab. So just accept it. It's never going to happen. Like, kept on walking. And I was like, whoa, Dad just had a really human moment.
Yeah.
And that guy, unfortunately, never forgot it and was like, you know, even down to like my dad's last week of life, this guy wouldn't let that go. And, you know, if I could impart anything to anybody, is like everybody is human.
Yeah.
Whether you're freaking, you know, Ron Santo having a burger at a shop, or you're John St. Augustine, you know, going for a walk in the Home Depot because you're excited to get some new light bulbs, whatever the heck it is.
Yeah, yeah. I get you. You know,
everybody has a moment.
I've always been fascinated. I think I was called to this. I think you're the same, that you were called to this work. I never went to any journalism school or broadcasting school, and I was called to this. So to me, the work is, whatever this is that I'm doing, whether it's a book I write or these podcasts or radio or TED Talks or columns or blogs or whatever it is, I feel like there's an obligation I have. I signed up for this, I'll do it. But that ends when I stop doing these things for the most part, unless somebody I know, we have a conversation. So I don't feel the need to walk into Home Depot and say, all right, everybody, listen up. Even though I've done TED Talks, that's not the place for it. But what I will say is I've always found it fascinating. The one that comes to mind in particular is I was doing for many years radio in Michigan. And, you know, you're on the air every day, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, live. You become part of people's lives. And I think it's like Mr. Rogers said, there is a respect that comes from that. There's a responsibility that the space between my microphone and those people's ears is sacred, and I treat it as such. I don't think everybody does that, but those are my marching orders, right? And I remember one time in particular getting an invite to speak at this big church, and I thought, don't you already have somebody up front doing that? It was the oddest thing, and my first thought was that, don't you have somebody that you kind of pay to do that, right? I mean, they're there, and they're telling you what you need to do and all that kind of stuff, or you know, making suggestions. They're theologians. They have a degree in that stuff. And the second part was, I've just been on the air 5 days a week for 3 hours a day. What could you possibly want from me that I already haven't said? However, keeping all that in mind, I realize that people are looking to be fed on some level. And if I signed up for this, you know, I always have the discernment of saying yes or no, I'll do this or I won't do that. But it's always been fascinating. It's not on the Tim Weigel level or some of these other things, but it does happen. And I'm always fascinated by that.
You know, you just talking about that, I've been asked to speak at churches as well, and I kind of go, really? And then I always just accept it because I figure there's somebody in that venue that needs to hear what I have to say that day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so even if it's one person, we've always said this, it's the power of one. If one person is moved by your words, then you've succeeded. It's not about math, right? The math, literally, from a church standpoint, they call it math. It's not about math numbers. Jesus was a carpenter. He went from stump to stump to try to impress one person with the message of faith and love and God, whether it was, you know, his own heart or somebody who was listening. It didn't matter about the masses. And I think so that's where you and I are very similar. Sometimes we go micro, and then you can get macro.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's literally about that one person. I'm having a hard transition here because going from having a broadcast outlet every night on AM radio, I'm getting these emails from people, where are you? I want to hear from you. And so I'm like, guys, stay tuned. I will be launching the Jen Weigel Show from my website. People can keep up on jenweigel.com for more information. But it's changing the platform, and then me having this sort of panic, like, oh my gosh, the listeners are in pain and they need resources. I want to help, you know.
Right.
Little helpful Jen is kind of going, oh no. And I just have to trust that they will find me, and if they don't find it from me, they find it from you, they find it from some other source, because the goal is always the same. We are always trying to connect dots and help lift people up. And so then there's a trust factor that has to come in that, oh, it'll work out, they'll find you, or you'll get the platform, or whatever it might be. But yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like sometimes you're scratching your head at going, wait, you want me to go where?
Right.
And then you just have to trust, like, I'll go. You know, I'm just following orders. Show me where to go.
It reminds me of Field of Dreams when Kevin Costner goes and finds James Earl Jones, right? And he drives all across from Iowa and goes finds James Earl Jones, who's an author. And, you know, did all this great work. He wrote The Boat Rocker, Terrence mm-hmm. Mann, and all that stuff. And here is this great advocate, this man who wrote books that changed the world, now living and writing children's books and fulfilling orders as quiet as he could be. And Kevin Costner's like, no, you got to come with me because, you know, you're needed again. You need to do this stuff, and I need to show you things. And James Earl Jones is like, I gave it the office, man. You know, I mean, that's really what it came down to. And yet there's such I walk that line a lot. It's like, I've been doing this for 23 years and it's had a lot of different, you know, ups and downs and ins and outs. And I say all the time, I'm most proud of the fact that I know that I've faltered, but I've never wavered from what I've been asked to do or were called to do. And so while it has taken on different incarnations, you know, when I first started in radio, I love saying when I first started in radio, I had a typewriter that didn't have an E on it. So whenever I had to write labels on things, I'd have to draw the E in. We didn't have the right equipment. Yeah. We didn't have the right equipment in the studio. And so I had to take the telephone and hold it up to the microphone if I wanted to talk to somebody in the air. But, you know, you learn through all that stuff. You should start at the bottom and work your way up to the top. And wisdom comes along with that. So now here I am all these years later, not unlike how I started, by myself, doing a show. And I look at the arc of your career. I mean, you have an Emmy Award on the shelf. You've done incredible work in journalism. Really impressive. And yet there's still that thing there, like, what do you want me to do next? It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
It is. And you know, the human part of me has realized that, you know what? Life isn't fair. It just isn't. Like, and Carolyn May says this all the time. If you're going to stand there and say, hey, I've done blah, so I should get blah, tough.
Right.
That's it. You know, it's not, that's not how it works. We have no idea what God's plan is for us. None. So we just have to show up and stop expecting this entitlement thing of, well, you know, good things happen to good people. You know, I used to think that, and I know that that's not actually the case all the time, but I'm still going to be a good person and I'm going to do good things because I believe that is my compass. That is how I have to run my life. But, you know, you talk about starting small. I started in shadow traffic, and we've said this many times between each other, but I had to sign a contract to make $8 an hour. You know, that was my starting salary at 25 years old at shadow traffic, you know, traffic and weather together. And then here I was, you know, almost 23 years later, circling full circle back to doing traffic on WLS in the morning. A perspective on being a traffic reporter as a woman in my 30s versus as a woman in my 20s, greatly changed because I now knew what it was like to be a commuter. And sitting in my car, I mean, I remember driving into the Tribune for years, or driving into the Sun-Times when I was a wellness columnist, sitting in traffic for an hour and 20 minutes, wondering why I can't write from home, you know, but you got to go in. And so here I was, you know, now as a reporter of traffic, you know, I was literally like, I know what it's like to be stuck in the car. And I would tell the story of what happened. Okay, guys, here's what happened. There was flooding. There was three accidents. There was a semi. You know, I would give people a backstory. And so I feel like that was a wonderful full circle thing. Even though I considered traffic reporting to be like the most horrifying job as a 20-something in my 30s, I decided to embrace it because for some reason the universe put me in that position. And I was going to make the best of it. And that's what I say to anybody out there that's struggling right now. Like, nothing is beneath feeding your family. And I wrote about this in my second book, I'm Spiritual Gamut. You know, I remember being on stage promoting my book, my second book, my first book, Stay Tuned, and because I wrote about this and I'm Spiritual Gamut, and literally seeing one of my dad's producers out there, Joe Snidoff, wonderful guy. He came up to me, we were talking, and I said, Joe, where are you now? And he said, I'm actually giving out meat samples at Sam's. And I was like, I thought he was kidding. I was like, very funny. He said, no, Jen, really, that's what I'm doing. And I'm doing high school football games. And he said, because nothing's going to be feeding my family. And I meet the most wonderful people. And I thought, wow, this is a great lesson in humility.
Yep.
His perspective of the glass half full, nothing is beneath feeding my family, and I get to meet all these wonderful people. He is a, you know, award-winning producer, and he was giving out the meat samples at Sam's Club. God, we love him. And so I literally, that helped me see, like, get over yourself, Jen. No matter what job the universe has for you, you will take it, you will feed your son, because that is all that matters right now, really. It's keeping food on the table and going where God guides you.
Interesting enough, so full disclosure, right? Behind the scenes, I want people to know, I just had a stop so we could readjust the volume. And all of a sudden, this little thing flashed in my head. It's like, our lives are so full of volume that unless we get some distance sometimes, we can't hear. Now, everything you said I could hear, I have my earbuds in and we're doing fine, but I'm listening to the distortion a little bit. Of course, I'm a studio production rat guy. It's got to sound just right. And that's not always possible on these setups. You and I are not at some mega studio somewhere across from each other with great Shure mics. So this is what it is, and it's fine. But I just had this little thought. It's like sometimes we have to distance ourselves from what we're hearing because there's a distortion level. And that kind of beckons to the work that you've done in your books, meaning that so much of your journalistic digging and your reporting is about just that, that there's a part of our lives that really still exists after we're gone. And I believe all this started with your dad, as you mentioned, Tim, passing away and set you on this quest. And I just wonder, it just was this weird interruption. It's like, I can hear what you're saying, but it's a little distorted. We need to kind of back up from that a little bit. So let's back up a little bit from the radio world that we're talking about for the most part. And you just mentioned your first book, Stay Tuned, and I'm Spiritual, Damn It. Did you ever, I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but did you ever think that these are the books you'd be writing about? These are the subjects ever?
No, I never thought I was going to write a book ever. And it was Laura Caldwell, the late Laura Caldwell. May she rest in peace. I loved Laura, a fabulous author in her own right, and a lawyer and an advocate for people who were unjustly put away. She was incredible. She passed away this February. Beautiful, beautiful woman, very young, too young to die. And she and I were out, and I was telling her stories of my adventures of finding these different, you know, intuitives and being blown away by their abilities and wondering what the hell it all meant, because as a journalist, I was a skeptic, and I set out to kind of prove some of these people wrong, and then I wound up with all this data and all these encounters. And so I was telling stories to Laura, and she looked at me and said, "You have a book here." And I said, "What? Maybe some articles or something," because writing was what I knew, but in article form, not in book form.
Right.
And she said, "I'm going to send you what a book proposal looks like. You're going to do this, and you're going to write a book."
Hmm.
And I'm like, "Okay." So she sent me an outline to a proposal. I started hammering away at it, and literally, oh my gosh, I think I had 29 rejections. I mean, thankfully, Bill Gladstone and Jack, is it Jennings? Is it Jack Jennings?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Decided to take me on, and at the time, Gladstone was, you know, working with, like, Jack Canfield and Eckhart Tolle and all these people. I was like, really? But and I believe you introduced me to those guys. So it was, again, it's like you, and they read a couple of the chapters that I had put together. And that was Laura nudging me that I had a book in me, and I never thought I had one, let alone four, and now I'm working on my fifth. So it just goes to show, if you're a storyteller, the platform will show up, however, you know, that's supposed to look.
Yeah. But the content itself, and I know you've had these great adventures with so many of these mediums and those of like talent and ability that on your website, I mean, this to me was the most exactly how your career and your life is. Quote, "I'm not telling anyone what to believe. I simply present the evidence so people can draw their own conclusions." So that, end quote. And now that stands alone, and that should cover everything. But so interesting to me, again, that when you write a book about this stuff, and my last book is about phenomenon, is about things that are so unexplainable to me that, you know, they boggle my mind. And I wrote them mostly to get it out, number one. And number two, everybody has something somewhere that they can't explain, and maybe that'll help. But number three, what it also realizes is that it pushes people's buttons. There's a couple in that book and in Every Moment Matters, and even in my first book, where people, I got this email like, you know, you're full of shit, this never happened. I'm like, wait, what? So you're past my stuff sometimes. I'm fascinated by the conversations you've had and, you know, all that work that you do. The blowback on your evidence presenting, you know, that's basically what you're doing, has been kind of unceasing over the years. How do you handle that?
I don't take it personally, because I know that anybody who is triggered by my stories hasn't healed something within themselves. I mean, I just had a crazy, crazy Bumble date. Okay, tried dating during COVID-19. That's really fun, let me tell you. And so, you know, I'm telling you this story because it was so mind-blowing. We met and we got along on so many levels and had talked on the phone, old school, right? Actually had phone conversations, and this person was in the business, and we knew a lot of the same people, you know, check that box, check that box, check that box, blah. So we go down to have a walk, you know, a socially distanced walk. And at the end, after spending an hour and a half and conversation flowing, he says, you know, I never asked you, what do you religious beliefs? And I said, I'm spiritual. He said, what does that mean? And I said, well, that means I'm tolerant of all religions. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. But I also believe in facts. And I'm a journalist. And, you know, I mean, facts are this. History says it was decades until the Bible was put together after Jesus died. These stories were told, you know, year after year by person after person after saint after whatever, you know. There were stories that were told. Like, we're telling stories now. Nothing was written down. There was no digital recorder. There were no, you know, there was no paper and pen even. So the faith it takes for people to have faith in their faith is pretty astronomical. So I basically said to him, I was raised Christian. I was confirmed Episcopalian, but I was baptized Lutheran. But basically, it didn't count because he's Catholic. And unless I was confirmed by a Catholic priest, it just didn't count. And oh, by the way, my son who wasn't baptized is going to hell, and women shouldn't be in the church. And it goes on and on and on. And I just sat there scratching my head because this, it was a deal breaker for him. My lack of Catholic faith was enough to completely scrap the entire relationship in his eyes. And I thought, wow. And so I said to him later in a text that, you know, this is my problem with organized religion, is that it's dividing people instead of what it was intended to do, which was bring people together in faith and love. Like, hello, could you be a little more Jesus-y or a little more like Mother Mary? Because this is not, you know, their intent was not to have a... And I said to him, I go, you know, Jesus was Jewish, right? He was a Jewish carpenter. He wasn't Catholic. Catholics came along later. And it was like his brain was going to explode. So, you know, I am always blown away by the judgment that comes from somebody presenting another perspective, which is what I do.
Yeah.
I present evidence so that people can draw conclusions. And if they're going to jump right to DEFCON 5, I can't stop them. Right. But it's not going to stop me from presenting the evidence. Not at all.
Well, you know, here's the thing. And you know, I alluded to this a little bit earlier. Going out on the ledge really changes the perspective. Most people would stand back and look at people out on the edge, whatever there it is, and say, you know, you're stupid for being on the edge. If I was there, this is how I would do it. But of course, they never do it. And I think what's always been my appreciation factor for the work that you do is you're, even though I know, because we've had a lot of conversations over the years about how sometimes neither one of us are real comfortable out there, but we have to go there. This is what we signed up for. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go to the edge and the ledge, take a peek over and say, hey, you should see this. It's really cool. Here's our experience, and this is kind of what happened. And most people, I think there's only one of two ways they're going to react. Either it's fear or faith. And that seems to be like, you know, the it seems to be opposite ends of the spectrum, but I think they're really close. And there's a very fine line between being fearful and faithful. And so this conversation you have with this guy on this date thing really illustrates perfectly that learned behavior can be a detriment in your life, because whatever he's right or wrong, that's the lanes he runs in. And whether you're right or wrong, that's the lanes you run in. And the fact that those lanes couldn't merge because of one thing that should be different, like you said, it should be a bridge and not a ditch. That's, in my opinion, not just on a religious aspect, political aspect, all the rest of these aspects, is what keeps the world the way that it is. The inability, seemingly, to drop our beliefs that we were given, that were taught to us, long before we had a firewall to believe anything different, that we could say, wait a minute, what about this? No, you don't question it, just do it. And you see what a detriment that is in people's lives. And I've said this for many years, and it's, I don't think it's an original thought for sure, but in each of our own experiences, we're either building, you know, adding a link to the chain, or we're breaking one. And if we're adding a link, then the next people that come along in our family or the people that we have to deal with, they're having a hell of a time because we are unwilling to let go of the chains that bind us to whatever that thing is. However, if you have the courage, like you do, writing your books, doing your shows, to constantly be getting a hacksaw out and sawing away at that thing, pretty soon it's a liberating factor, and you almost it's your obligation then, really, as a journalist and as a person, to say, hold on a second here. You know, this is where I used to be. This is where I'm at now. And so it can be for you, which is kind of what I think the whole purpose of being alive is to raise each other up. It's too easy to put each other down. That is so simple. It takes no thought. That's reacting. But responsibility and our ability to respond to these things, being a responsive person, that takes some spiritual maturity. And, you know, Bill Curtis and I, we've all known each other a very long time. And one of the podcasts I did with him not long ago, you know, I asked him, I said, hey, BK, listen, you know, the world's a shit box. Right? And it's always been a shit box. And do you think we have any chance of ever getting out of the shit box to any great degree? And in his typical form, he thought about it for a few minutes and he went into the BK-isms of, well, of course we will. We're just trying to figure it out. You know, he's so optimistic. And I'm not there quite yet. I'm not at kumbaya with him. But I also understand that he's, you know, experiences are far more global than mine. And I took that to heart saying, if this guy who's nearly 80, who's traveled the world and has been hammered more often than I have about some of the stuff he's done, if he's still optimistic, then maybe I should be on board a little bit more and break some of my own chains. You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, this experience with this dogmatic, very inflexible Catholic made me realize, like, how little progress we've made, except I've been binge-watching The Tudors, and I guess it's a progress aisle, right? I think we're in the progress lane, but we're not beheading people for being different, you know,
at least not here.
No, not here. You're right. But still, somewhere, they are. And that is exactly, I was on an Instagram Live last week with Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, and he talked about the intolerance right now that this virus is bringing up, especially in religion and political, right? On social media, you're seeing, it's like, no. If you cannot think my way, then we cannot have a conversation. And long gone are the days where you could sit at a table at Thanksgiving and just riff on different perspectives. Like, that day is gone. And it's such an unfortunate reality of what's happening here. But, you know, I've been told by many of these mystics and wisdom seekers and the intuitives, and even Carolyn Mace, great best-selling author, she said, I bring up what other people have yet to heal. And it's their choice if they want to heal it or if they want to run in the corner. That is my mission, apparently. And I do it unconsciously. I'll give you an example. I have a friend who's completely homophobic, and I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. So as I'm talking to this person, I'm bringing up, for some reason, all of my gay friends and stories about them. And this, that, the other. And then they get up and they storm off. And I realize, oh my gosh, I did it again. Like, you know, I'm gonna push on your bruises. So if you haven't healed it yet, I'm gonna bring it up. If you haven't faced your addiction, I'm gonna face it for you. And I don't even mean to do it. It's just how I roll sometimes. So this guy has judgment, and my belief system is gonna push on his bruise. And we all, like you said, we can either break the chain or be a link for the chain. We can either dig a ditch or build a bridge. And my hope is we can build more bridges than dig ditches. But at the same token, we can't convince everybody. You know, inspiration comes from change, comes from inspiration, not imposition. That's a big one for me. If somebody's knocking on your door and going, you must find Jesus, you know, you're going to slam the door.
But if
somebody is doing something, you're like, wow, they're so happy. They must be, I'll have what she's having. You know, that is when change comes, not because someone's forcing you to or shoving it down your throat. So I try not to shove things down people's throats, but I guess I push on people's bruises, and I don't even know I'm doing it.
And I, you know, and that's not unique unto you. I think we all in some way, shape, or form are like all bumper cars in life, bouncing off each other, saying, does this work? Does this work? Does this work? How do you like me now? How do you like me now? And our inability, though, to realize that, I think that's the curse of consciousness. You know, the unconscious person goes, shit happens to me. And the conscious person goes, wow, shit just happened. There's a huge difference. If you're unconscious to some degree in life and things are just happening to you all the time, you're a victim. And there's very little power in that. But when you say, oh, geez, there's some shit happening here, then you're a participant in it. And then you have choices. And then you have power that is unlike being a victim of anything. And so I've learned a long time ago, you know, the difference between an incident and an accident is an act of faith. It's a conscious choice of going, see, this thing happened to me, or it happened through me. And they are so different. And this, you know, this conversation is all of ours. You know, this is how we talk off the air, folks. This is a normal, this is a normal John and Jen convo. And now we're just, you're all listening in. But to me, this is this ongoing experiment in human behavior modification every day. So when I wrestle with this, I see people, especially in the landfill of Facebook, going, oh my God, the world is really, you know, gone to hell. Well, you'd have to find, I'd like you to point out when it wasn't, because you can't. It's all about perspective. So I have people say, God, I wish it was just 1968 again. I was, you know, 10. Well, try that in Selma, Alabama. How'd that work? So it's all a matter of perspective. So as we get ready to wrap this up, I think the little Wednesday wisdom nuggets that I've taken away from our conversation, we did rant, that's for sure. But the thing that keeps coming back to me whenever you and I talk is that you have this authenticity factor. It is very hard to find, and you know who you are, and more importantly, you know who you're not. And I think that has always been the rudder that has guided you. And when you're doing, when you know who you are and who you're not, then it, while the map or the route isn't always easy, but at least you know that you've navigated these waters before and you can do it again. That's kind of what I've taken away from our convo today. How about you, kid?
Well, as we were talking, somebody just texted me this, so I want to share this with you because it's pretty relevant. Grapes must be crushed to make wine. Diamonds form under pressure. Olives are pressed to release oil. Seeds grow in darkness. Whenever you feel crushed, under pressure, pressed, or in darkness, you are in a powerful place of transformation. Trust the process.
There you go.
So there you have it.
Even
when you have it.
Especially when you can't see it, which was, you know, the ego wants to know the outcome, but the spiritual part of our lives just knows the income. That's it.
Yep. Faith and fear, they're very close, and they both start with F. So let's not bring the other F-bomb into this.
It'd be so easy to do. I know. I appreciate your time today, as always, Jen. Take care.
Thank you, John. Thanks.
Every time I have an opportunity to talk with Jennifer Weigel, especially on the record, we talk off the record all the time, I'm always amazed at her ability to take what seems to be complex things to many people and put them into context for a lot of people. She's been on the radio for years. And just as a sidebar, doing this work brings with it, it's part and parcel of stepping out into the world and putting yourself out there. There are some days I can't believe I'm doing this. You know, meaning like I was never trained classically for this. I didn't go to school for this. And yet here I am still doing this 23 years later. So that's the marching orders that I have. But when you put yourself out there in the public eye to any level, whether you're, you know, you got 27 million people listening or 27 people listening, there's always a bit of a risk that we take doing this stuff. Meaning that talking about subjects and ideas and thoughts and concepts that you may not even be comfortable with or ever given much mind to, it's about challenging that. I mean, what's the point? It really boils down to me, what is the point of being alive if you're not really fully alive? And I was actually, before I rolled over and called Jen and say, hey, let's do the Wednesday wisdom thing, because I was already ready to crank up the Wednesday rant. And what the Wednesday rant was is about death. All right. I'll keep this brief because we're all dying as I speak. I lost a good friend of mine 10 days ago today. His name was Phil Larson. We went to high school together. We played football in high school together. We saw each other on ball yards after we graduated. He was a year older than mine. It was really interesting. We were born in the same year. We were 9 months apart, but he's like a year older, and he'd call me kid. Give me a break. Anyway, Phil passed away. He was 62. It was sudden and unexpected, and it's difficult. For all of us who knew him, there's a hole there that will not heal. It's not supposed to. And then I started to once again, apply perspective and context to all this. And I started thinking about all the other friends that I've lost unexpectedly suddenly. And the list is long. There are people that I knew that were dealing with illnesses and such like that, and there was an expectation, sure, that, you know, this is what's coming for them. And then there are people who were here yesterday and that are gone today. And those are the ones that are difficult, especially people that were close to me. And I started thinking about it, though, and pulling a little bit further away. And, well, I don't want to become emotionally detached to all this, because being human also means you got to put up with this stuff and be glad that you're here. I have on my wall in my studio slash office the memorial bulldog plaque for my high school, the men and women that played sports there that have passed and gone ahead of me. And it wasn't just a few days before Phil passed that we had completed the list of names that would go on that plaque. And we were kidding. He's like, well, at least Augie, you know, we're not on there yet. So, you know, that's a blessing. And just yesterday I shipped off the name tags to be done and I had to put his name on there. And that's difficult, but necessary. And what I'm getting at here is that in these times we live in, and it's always been this way, but more so now because of all the technology and people are squished together, information runs rampant over our lives. The cause of death for Phil probably will never be known. There'll be some speculation here and there. Some people that I know, their cause of death was very clear. My buddy John Denver died in a plane crash. I mean, that was about as clear as it get. Walter Payton was a friend and had the pancreatic cancer, and that took his life. And so various levels of connection to death. And it always comes down, people, the biggest question I got was, how did he die? How did Phil die? And I don't know that. And I quite frankly, I don't care. And so the Wednesday rant that I was working on before I jumped over to this wisdom piece of this, whatever this value may have, was that the cause of death for all of us is life, meaning it is part of life, that the ego thinks somehow everybody else dies but me, and the next thing you know, you're gone. And truly, when you open the newspaper or look online, if you're not in the obituary, then you won. So I'm not really interested in the cause of death for anybody at this point in my life, but their causes in life, that's got my attention. And I think that's what creates the hole. The cause of death doesn't create the hole in the heart. It's knowing that what they did in life has ended for them, that their cause in life is far more important than the cause of death. And Phil was all about saving dogs. This rough and tough, we used to call him the Archie Bunker of Schurz, because he was just this grumpy guy, this big fella, that had this tough exterior and a huge heart for the four-legged in his life. And he was always doing this rescue dog thing. And matter of fact, in the last couple of years, once a week, he would drive from Chicago to Joliet, which is a bit of a hike and back, and would gather rescue dogs and bring them to a shelter. And this is what he did. 90% of what was on his Facebook page are pictures of dogs. And so that piece of the puzzle for that group and that activity has been removed. And that's what's sad. Somebody will step up and take his place. Obviously, that's the assembly line we live on. But so when I look at the two things, instead of saying, oh my God, how did he die? That's not the question. The question is, how did he live? How did he live? Whether it was 62 years or 74 years or 44 years. You know, how do they live? How do you live? How do I live? Because death is inevitable. That's just the way it is. And we all come in with this, you know, known birth date. You get your birth certificate. It shows exactly what time you showed up on the planet. I don't know if they still do this, but mine has footprints on there that are the size of my thumb now. I can't even believe it. But anyway, try to fit those 13s on there now. I'd need four pieces of paper. But you have the birth certificate. This is exactly where you showed up. This is what you weighed. This is what color your hair was and your eyes are, who your parents were or weren't. This is the facility you were born into. All that stuff is known. And then from that point on until your death certificate, it's up to you. The cause of life, far more important. And listen, I was thinking about it last night. As I said, I was watching a documentary on one of the channels on cable about the wrestling tag team, the Road Warriors. And I know those guys. I worked with them for a few years. They're in both of my books. They're in Living an Uncommon Life. There's a whole chapter on those guys. Joe Laurinaitis, Animal, and Mike Hegstrand, Hawk. And Hawk died when he was 46 back in 03. He'd be 62 now. He'd be Phil's age, roughly 63 years old, about the same age. And he didn't have all that time. And this show focuses more on the dark side of his life than the light side. And I was, at least they put some good stuff in there, but the guy that I remember, the cause of his life, was helping children, and he was the best friend you could ever have. And I remember him doing things with Special Olympics, and he'd walk up to a homeless guy, give him $100, and it didn't matter what the guy did with the money. You know, that there was a little bit of that, but not enough of that. It was more focused on his demise and his end. And I'm saying that doesn't matter to me. It doesn't change anything. Knowing how somebody died doesn't change the fact that he died. Knowing how they live can change how you live. So every time, of course, I see a dog, I've always thought of Phil. I'm like, it's amazing to me. He had rescue dogs, and he'd go back and forth and do all this great stuff. So the point in all of this is, on this slash rant Wisdom Wednesday, was it's all about perspective again. And you're going to die, and I'm going to die, and every person on the planet's going to die. And they've been dying since we came here. And so what you do with that time in between is really of the uttermost. And I've always said this, and I think it's really important, and I remind myself every time I say it, don't major in minor things. You know, I was chatting with Phil online, like we did every morning, at about 7 o'clock that morning, 7:15, somewhere there. We'd always go back and forth. This was one long, ongoing conversation. And by 11:30, he was gone. And that shock is there. It starts to wear off, and then you pull back and go, damn, that could have been me. We're almost the same age. We came from the same grammar school. We went to the same high school. We chewed a lot of the same dirt. And it was not my time yet. It was his time. And the time he used that I knew him, especially the last 6-7 years we were friends, he used it well. And what else could you say but that? So I just dismiss the whole cause of death thing. Far more important to know what your cause in life is. Until next time, safe travels. Take care of yourself. Thanks for listening. Adios.